I'm Izzy Judd, and welcome to my podcast, Let's Talk Fertility. This podcast is sponsored by Pregnacare. During my own fertility treatment and pregnancies, I was recommended to take specialist vitamins and minerals to support my nutritional needs. There are many benefits to taking these supplements, and they also made me feel like I was taking a proactive approach to prepare myself and my body as best I could. Pregnacare Conception and Wellman Conception vitamin and mineral supplements provide advanced nutritional support for men and women trying for a baby, including zinc, vitamin D, and the exact levels of folic acid recommended for women by the UK Department of Health. Pregnacare, expert nutritional care while trying for a baby. To find out more, visit www.pregnacare.com.
Izzy Judd. We've known each other for about a year now, but for listeners who maybe don't know you as well as I do, wife to McFly's Harry, mum to Lola and Kit, musician, Britain's Got Talent finalist, author of the best-selling book Dare to Dream about your fertility journey. I want to start by asking you why you've decided to do this podcast. Who's it for?
So I've decided to start this podcast because I feel so passionately about keeping the conversation about fertility going. I have certainly felt that just because I now have my two beautiful children and I'm so lucky to have Lola and Kit, a part of me will never let go of what I went through. Mm-hmm. To have my family. And it's funny, it's almost like, it's not like you go, right, I've done it. For me, fertility will always stay with me. And it's something I really want to continue talking about. So when we decided that we would start a podcast, I thought it would be really great to get a selection of guests and people to talk about fertility, whether it's something because of a personal experience or whether it's an expert or a more holistic approach, but something that will hopefully be a companion to people listening that might be going through the struggles that we faced.
Yeah. And who do you imagine might be listening?
Yeah, I mean, I guess as well, it's interesting because people that listen obviously may be going through their journey at the moment. They might be a friend of somebody that's going through it and they don't know what to say, or a family member, or even perhaps even somebody like me that still feels very interested to hear about fertility and fascinated to hear about the other stories. Because I think what's so common and what I'm hearing a lot of is that you feel so deeply connected to other people when you can start to open up and share your stories, and you feel like there is the space to feel like you're allowed to have this conversation. Mm-hmm. So hopefully by talking, we're giving other people the chance to open up and feel that they can talk.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, I mean, that seems to me what's so brilliant about you doing this and your book. I wonder if we can go to the beginning of your book. And the first chapter is called Happy Ever After. And it starts with this fairy tale wedding and then everything changed. Can you take us back to that sort of beginning and what happened? Talk us through the story a bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you even asking me that, because looking back, I was such a different person before I knew how hard it was going to be to have a family and motherhood. Mm-hmm. The person I was back then is so naive, really, into the reality of, the world of fertility. Mm-hmm. But going back, Harry and I have been together, I think, about 8 years when he finally decided that, yeah.
Took him 8 years.
I think it was about 8 years.
And how old were you when you met then?
So what, I would have been 20, yeah. 21. And we met on tour. I was playing the violin in the backing orchestra for McFly on their Wonderland tour. And we literally, our eyes met over a triangle in their song, All About You. Oh, actually, sorry, it was a tambourine. I must get that right, otherwise Harry will be. And honestly, it was just one of those moments where I met him and it felt like I'd known him forever. And it was a time in my life where I just had my heart broken and I'd just lost my dear grandmother. And there he was. And it was just so
beautiful.
Yeah. And so we got married. Mm-hmm. And my instinct, kind of my natural reaction was, okay, well, we'll start trying for a family. And Harry said, oh, well, let's wait for a bit. I said, what are we? Wait, we've been together how many years? And I was, you know, I'd always wanted to be a mum. That was how I had always pictured my life to be. And I said, okay. And eventually I did persuade him and we did start trying for a family. And the first month, my period didn't start. And I remember we thought, we've done it.
Yeah.
So we bought the pregnancy test. We're actually at my parents' house. We both went into the loo together because just assumed it was a sure thing. And it was negative. And I, you know, instantly, where do you go? Google.
Yeah, Dr. Google.
Yeah. And that's probably where my obsession with Google began, actually.
Yeah.
And I spent far too long on there.
Yeah, well, you're not the only one, Izzy. You beat yourself up about that.
And, you know, it says it can take a few days for the pregnancy hormone to rise. And so I thought, okay, I'll test again in a few days and started to look out for all the symptoms. Anyway, very quickly, we established I was not pregnant and therefore, you know, right, I need to see a doctor. You know, what's going on? This is...
Did you really think that quickly?
That quickly. And actually, if there is one thing I could say to myself going back, I wish I had understood better that this can take time.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're in such a world where we expect things to just happen, or we're used to things happening, and if they don't, we can fix it. And there's, you know, with the click of a button, things can be done, and we have control. And being somebody that likes to be in control, basically a control freak, for me, it was a case of, right, well, we need to fix this. Mm. So there's a problem, we need to fix it. And I did know previously that I had polycystic ovaries.
Right. When was that diagnosed?
So that sort of earlier in my 20s, because I really struggled with bad skin, had bad acne, and I was told I had polycystic ovaries, but I wasn't told the connection about my fertility and PCOS. I didn't even realise that there was a connection.
And for anyone who's listening who might not know what PCOS is, I mean, just briefly, what is the condition?
So basically, PCOS is when you don't ovulate. I think this is the thing, though. I wasn't your classic PCOS candidate, if you like.
Yeah.
In that I did have regular periods. And there are various other symptoms like excess hair or you're not able to lose weight. But for me, the only thing that triggered me to go and see a gynecologist was because of my skin.
Right.
And it was only at that point that I was told I had polycystic ovaries.
And that was in your early 20s and they didn't give you any suggestion that it might affect your fertility?
Nothing.
Yeah.
And I was put on the pill for my skin.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so...
But then when it didn't work that first month, something obviously sort of triggered in your head that, like, maybe you ought to go and see someone.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess, I suppose it had always slightly been a fear of mine about not being able to get pregnant. Maybe subconsciously. But I do think, I mean, you'll see from... with Dare to Dream, that I really feel that my mind was so powerful in the process of trying to conceive. And I think I got myself into such a state that first month about it happening that my body almost reacted to that stress that I was putting myself under. And yet, when you are going through it, the worst thing anyone can say to you is, you know, just relax.
Yeah.
You know, because It's on your mind 24/7.
No,
it's
absolutely. All you think about. I totally agree with you. And I want to talk to you a little bit more about the mind-body connection, because I know it's something that you feel really sort of strongly about. But tell me, so you went to a doctor. Did you get a diagnosis?
Yeah, so they ran a whole load of tests then.
Yeah.
So, you know, checking my egg reserve, all my hormone levels, which everything was fine. It was polycystic ovaries. So the treatment was Clomid, which is quite a common medication for PCOS, as well as metformin. But I actually jumped straight into Clomid because I just wanted to be pregnant. So they were saying, take this, so you just do. And I responded so badly to Clomid physically and mentally, and I found it a very difficult time. And over those 6 months of Clomid treatment, nothing was happening. It was like my body just resisted everything. And very, very quickly, I lost a lot of confidence and myself, really.
So then it sounds like you were very quickly in the thick of sort of fertility tests, fertility treatment. And talk a bit about a little bit more about what that was doing to your sort of emotional state in your mind, because I know that you've also been very honest about your struggles with anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And how was that then affecting you? Because to go back to where we began, you had this, you know, fairy tale marriage and life, and suddenly it was taking a path that you weren't expecting.
I mean, I think for me, you know, I grew up in a family. I'm one of four. I've got three older brothers, and very loving family, very close. But tragically, my eldest brother suffered a very serious head injury when I was only 12. And living with a trauma and grief in a family, I think at a time in my life I was, you know, 12, 13, puberty's just starting. I do often wonder about the effect that trauma had on my whole system.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say, I have suffered with anxiety. And when you are in an extreme state of anxiety, it disrupts your hormones because you're producing far more adrenaline. And yeah, everything, I think, became imbalanced. And my desire to start a family was so much around because of what my family had lost,
mm-hmm.
with the grief of my brother, even though he is still with us and he's the life and soul of every party, and he is my, you know, he's wonderful, Rupert. But my want for a family was almost to make my mum and dad have something new, a new chapter, a new exciting time, you know, grandchildren. So I suppose I did put quite a lot of pressure on myself for this idealistic, you know, next step that was going to happen.
I wanted to just, moving on from what you just said, I mean, you found yourself in fertility treatment, and then after the Clomid didn't work, you embarked on your first round of IVF.
Yeah, so what happened was sort of during those 6 months of Clomid, I rapidly lost who I was.
Yeah.
And Harry was going to parties on his own and going to events on his own because I just didn't want to be there. I didn't want to go. I didn't want to have to have the conversation of, you know, are you thinking of starting a family?
Yeah.
I felt really uncomfortable within my skin, my body, everything. I had reacted to the medication that I was taking. I felt very bloated. There was nothing that felt like me at
yeah.
all. And it was after another negative pregnancy test that I sat with Harry and basically was just numb to all emotion. I'd gone through so many emotions and I just didn't really know what to feel anymore, but I just was numb. And Harry sort of said, you know, look, worst case scenario, it's you and me. And it was a real light bulb moment of, I had totally forgotten to actually understand that there is someone else going through this with me.
Mm.
And I married Harry, and that he, in that moment, was totally enough. And I had forgotten really to remember what my relationship was.
Mm, mm.
And that's what made me go, right, something's got to change. This is just ridiculous. This is, I am not going to be the girl that went away on her honeymoon and got pregnant. Mm. I'm not going to be the girl that gets pregnant next month, and maybe not the month after. That is not my experience, and I have to do something differently.
Yeah.
And that was when I decided to do a complete mind, body, everything detox.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit more about that then, because there is this wonderful chapter in your book, which is called A Whole New Me. And it feels to me that that's the sort of mark of a new beginning, really. And I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about the key things that you did to create that new you.
Yeah. So I reached a point where I knew something had to change. I couldn't continue feeling how I did about myself and giving myself such a hard time. And I just decided I needed to do a complete mind, body, soul detox. So I basically looked at my nutrition and ate like a goddess. I looked at my what I was doing with my fitness. So I did a lot of more holistic exercise like yoga and swimming and walking, lots of being outside, just around nature, just those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. Just really helped balance me. And then also I looked at the supplements I was taking. So I took Pregnacare, which helps to balance your hormones. It helps with reducing stress and also helps with the quality of your eggs. And so I suppose I was just looking at myself as a whole, not necessarily just because I wanted to become pregnant, mm-hmm. but actually to look after myself again,
mm.
having, I think, neglected me kind of emotionally and physically.
And did you feel the effects quickly?
I was amazed at how quickly I felt better about everything. Mm-hmm. I felt more in control again. I was doing a lot of mindfulness, a lot of visualization. So, and actually that's something going into IVF, which I would really recommend, is some really great visualizations of what's actually going on inside you whilst you are going through treatment. So you really visualize the follicles growing, and you really, you know, at the time after transfer, I would think about the lining of the womb being like roots of the tree grabbing on to these embryos, holding on to the embryo tightly, and really visualize becoming pregnant, really believing. Mm. And I think because the mind is so powerful.
Yeah,
so,
I agree with you.
So, yeah, so I think all those things, it's not because it might affect the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
It's more about how it makes you feel within the process.
Yeah, and if it then affects your outcome, even better.
Exactly.
But if you're feeling good, that's a good start.
That's it. And I remember so often during this process wishing I could look inside me to see what's going on.
Mm.
You know, that feeling of, or if you could just tell me that in, you know, 6 months or whenever, or a year or 2 years or however long it would be, it's the not knowing.
Yeah, I think that's one of the really hard things, that you don't know where it's going
to
end.
That's it. But what you do have control of is how you choose to think about it and your mind, and as best you can. I mean, you always have those days. You have those days where you just want to crawl under the duvet and you don't want to get up, and that's fine. I had many of those, you know, putting on chick flicks. And but then there are the days when you go, right, let's do this. I'm, you know, I can do this. And now looking back, I think I was so much stronger than I ever believed I could be.
Mm.
I said no to Facebook.
Right.
I came off Facebook.
Facebook's a real problem for people struggling to conceive. I mean, can you talk a bit more about why it's such a horrible thing?
Because you can wake up in the morning and feel, oh, do you know what? I feel good today. I'm gonna go for a run. I'm feeling in a good place. I've woken up feeling fresh. And then you get your phone. You go, I'll just have a flick through, you know. And at the time, it was Facebook. And then bang, there'll be, I'm pregnant. And it just, that's it. You're back at square one again. And it hits you because you so want to hit like, and you so want to be happy for that person. And you are, but you feel so sorry and gutted for yourself.
I think that's really right. And I've said before that there's no word in the English language for feeling happy for someone and sad for yourself at the same time. And I think there are two instances that I'm thinking of in your book. There's one where you go out with a friend and she tells you you're pregnant. But the instance that really gets me is with your brother, who you're very close to. The brother who didn't have the injury, who now tells you that he's pregnant. I wonder if you can talk a bit about that and the feelings that that generated when him and his wife announced that they were pregnant.
Yeah, so that actually happened. So jumping forward a little bit, I had my first round of IVF and I went on to miscarry. And around the same time, I mean, literally weeks in it, my brother and his wife fell pregnant month one. And Harry got a phone call. And this was a good few weeks after I had miscarried. And I remember Harry picking up the phone and he just said, you need to speak to Izzy yourself. And so he passed the phone over. And the first thing he said to me was, he said, I'm sorry, but we're expecting a baby. And I remember just thinking how awful that he is having to apologise for something that is so wonderful. And that I was going to be an auntie for the first time, and yet I couldn't be happy. And I was just so angry. And I was so angry with everything. I was angry that it had been so easy for them. I was angry that I had put them in the situation that they felt they had to say, I'm sorry. And, you know, I just was so angry that fertility had sort of taken away.
It robs that of you from you, doesn't it?
I
feel that so strongly myself, and I think so many people listening will share that feeling as well. I mean, what other things, because I've got this theory that we need to sort of identify the symptoms of struggling to conceive or going through fertility problems in the same way that we perhaps do with grief or depression. Like, if you've got these five things, you know, you can be sure that you're struggling. I wonder what were the other things? Because I think sort of not being able to feel happy for people is just such it's another pain, isn't it?
Yeah, and it also makes you dislike yourself more than you already dislike yourself.
Yeah.
But also with that situation, what I really learned from it was, because so tragically my brother and his wife went on to miscarry at 12 weeks, and that was when I made a promise to myself that every time I passed somebody pregnant or heard about somebody that was pregnant, that I would wish them well and have a healthy pregnancy. And I would make a conscious decision that instead of somebody walking past me and feeling, you know, that awful feeling that you get in your tummy, to actually say, I wish you well in your pregnancy. I hope you have a healthy pregnancy, because you don't know what their story is or what they've been through.
Yeah.
And even though there were days which were hard to do that, I really made myself.
Yeah.
So,
and so many people do have a fertility story. And then the moment you start talking about it, you realise that other people do too, but we don't talk about it enough. Why do you think that is?
I do think that fertility is a silent epidemic.
Yeah.
And I also think it's very difficult to know how to start the conversation. So that was what I would find so difficult. Being somebody that is very much a talker, and I like to be open, and probably too open, and I, you know, probably share too much. But to then have this weight on me that I felt I couldn't talk about was really difficult, because mm-hmm. I felt like I was carrying it around with me, but then never felt the opportunity to say, when somebody says, how are you? How do you say, well, actually,
yeah,
you know, I can't get pregnant. I'm, you know, we've been trying for how many months, and you just, it's very difficult to know. And also you're at a time where a lot of friends around you are getting pregnant.
Yeah.
You don't want to be the one that's, you know, saying you can't, or talking about miscarriage when they're at a time of their life that's so happy. And
yeah.
So it just, I think it's very difficult to know how to start the conversation. But when you do, you'd be amazed at how it helps you, but also how often someone will come back and say, my sister or my friend or me. And then, you know, that was certainly the case for me when I started to open up. It was just, you know, amazing how many people had faced difficulties.
And can you talk a little bit more about your decision to open up? Because I think it was a particularly brave decision, particularly that you're part of a couple that's in the public eye, and you really didn't need to. You know, everyone thought you had a perfect life, and you actually, you know, when you got pregnant finally, you made the decision to tell the world what you've been through. Why did you do that?
So when I fell pregnant, there, I suppose because Harry is in the public eye, that we would announce that I was pregnant. Mm-hmm. And I spoke to Harry at length about the fact that I didn't feel comfortable not telling the story and the truth, because I was so proud to have conceived Lola through IVF. And I thought it was just, you know, something that should be shared and talked about, and there's nothing to be ashamed of. And actually, I know what it feels like to scroll through, you know, social media and see another pregnancy announcement and the way that makes you feel. And I just wasn't prepared to, actually with us, it was with a magazine. I didn't want to pretend that it had just been easy, because it was far from easy, and we had had troubles, and I had had a miscarriage, and we did go through IVF. And I think as well, because for me, there was this assumption that it's only women of a certain age that struggle mm-hmm. to conceive. And actually, that's not the case at all. So I just said to Harry, I don't want to not say our story.
Yeah.
But interestingly, I'm not sure why I didn't feel able to talk about it sooner. But I think probably because when you are going through it, or you're going through IVF, there's so much that you're trying to learn and take on board and going through yourself, that it's difficult to know how to explain it, because you're learning it all yourself.
Yeah. Your first round of IVF resulted in a miscarriage.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that we often feel about IVF is that you don't want to go down that route, and then you find yourself on that route, and but then you think, well, at least it's going to work, and it's going to work first time, and then it often doesn't. And of course, your miscarriage was at the worst time of year for anyone struggling to conceive, Christmas.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I had invested so much emotionally and physically into our first round of IVF. I was zen because I was doing yoga and swimming and lots of walks. I was using mindfulness, and I was probably in the best physical and emotional state I've ever been in, because I was determined to give myself absolutely the best possible chance going into IVF. And I almost just became fascinated by my well-being. Mm-hmm. And what I realized through my focus stopped becoming on becoming pregnant. My focus became on looking after myself. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that I thought, well, if I do all this, I will get pregnant. It was more, I have got myself into such a hole, I need to start looking after myself. And I very quickly noticed the benefits of looking after my well-being, which is something I talk about in Dare to Dream, because yeah. I don't think it's, if I do this, I will get pregnant. But you're about to go through a grueling round of medication and scans, and it's emotionally and physically what's going on to you and with your body and your mind, that to go into it as well prepared as you can. I think that was another reason why I felt I wanted to write about that, to share my experience, because I really believe that it is so helpful to look after yourself as best you can going into a round of IVF. So when we did have our first round of IVF, I was actually in a really good place. I was excited. There was suddenly this chance that this might happen. And, you know, I always think of IVF like a hurdle race, and you just have to take each step and each, you know, hurdle, and you hope you get over it, and then you'll get to the next hurdle. And for us, we did. You know, we got over each hurdle. We had an embryo that was ready to go, and so we went for transfer day. And I remember Harry and I being in this room, which you think would be quite sterile, and I suppose it is quite sterile, and you're suddenly sat there in the most unromantic setting, just about to have the most amazing moment of your life happen, but you're actually able to witness it. Mm.
Did you see your little embryo?
Yeah,
on the screen?
So I remember
it's beautiful, isn't it?
I remember the embryologist, handing it through, and Harry was there holding my hand, and they project it onto the screen, and I remember just thinking, God, it just looked like this moon, you know, all the craters, and it was just the most. I was just blown away. I just did not know that that's what IVF could be like.
Mm. Because on the one hand, it's absolutely not how you want to make a baby. No. But on the other hand, if you do end up making a baby like that, and you see its very first day of life, which you would never have been able to see without this science, it is incredible.
That's it. And there was this flash of light as the embryo was released, mm-hmm. you see. And I remember just looking at Harry, who was in floods of tears, which I think surprised him as well. And there I was, kind of, you know, legs akimbo. And there was suddenly this chance of life. And I, for those weeks to follow, had part of us with me.
Mm.
And there was hope. And it was the first time in so long that, you know, I had wanted that for so long, and I knew it was there. And it was that case. Then it was, can I get off the bed? Can I go to the loo? What can I, you know, I just didn't want to move for 2 weeks, because there's, you know, the typical 2 week wait, which I'm sure people listening to will know.
The terrible two week wait. In but, my mind.
But as you say, because it was Christmas for me,
I
totally threw myself into Christmas. So it was carols on in the evening, wrapping Christmas presents, doing the tree. I put Harry and I's wedding album together. It was something I've been meaning to do for ages, and I hadn't done it. And so it was, you know, I did a scrapbook. I just made sure.
You were nesting in a big way.
I was. I just made sure I had things to make me happy. Mm. And gosh, it was the longest 2 weeks of my life. But I almost didn't want to know the result because I almost just wanted to enjoy knowing it was there for that time with me. So
I think you've just, again, totally articulated something that a lot of people feel, which is the day that test day comes, you're longing for it throughout the 2 week wait and the time is going interminably. And then when it arrives, you don't want to take the test because you know it's going to be definitive.
Yeah. And also, I think we fall into two categories. There's the ones who test really early and keep testing, or I would actually rather my period start than have to pee on those sticks.
Yeah, and wait that 3 minutes. Yeah, I'm totally with you.
I'm sorry to be so candid, but it literally is. I can't bear them.
Yeah.
And but it obviously the day came and I'd actually been to see Rupert playing in a concert the night before, and my dad said to me, you're glowing. And I remember just really holding on to that. And the following morning I woke up, I think it was 4 a.m, which for me warranted the first, weird of the day.
I know, I love that bit in your book because I just think there's so many women in the world who do that pee at that really early hour.
Really early.
Is it
hours.
Too early? Can I do it now? I just really felt,
And it was positive. But the line was very faint, and Harry, funnily enough, it never sat very comfortably with him. He felt he wanted a stronger line. I know they start very faint and they often get darker as the pregnancy hormone increases, but Harry just never felt settled within it, whereas I really did. And, that was it. I was projecting. I was already, designing the nursery, talking about names. That was it. We'd done it. And, then it was...
How long was it before things started to...
So it was just before Christmas. And so I would have been about 6 weeks pregnant. And so very early... Typically, you would probably not even know. But obviously, when you go through fertility treatment, you know at the earliest possible stage. So we were back at my parents' for Christmas, but there weren't enough bedrooms, which meant we would be on an airbed. And Harry, bless him, was like, we'll book into a hotel. We need to make sure that you're comfortable. And so we actually went to stay at the hotel where we got married over Christmas. And it was Boxing Day when I woke up again in the early hours, and there was just a little bit of light coming through the hotel curtains. And I went to the loo and, I was bleeding, and it was just utterly terrifying because I just thought, well, that's just not possible. How could it now be? Could that card be dealt? How could it be that cruel? Why have I failed?
Yeah. And did you go straight to Google?
I went straight to Google.
And what did Google tell you?
And it can be common in early pregnancy.
Yeah. So did you have that sort of oscillation in your head, like maybe it's okay, maybe it's not okay?
I was just holding on. I felt like I was holding on to the pregnancy. But that my instinct was that I was losing. But the bleeding, it did stop, and went back to my mum's for Boxing Day, and I did tell her, and she actually said, oh, I had quite a bit of bleeding in early pregnancy. So I suppose part of me thought, okay. And then it was a few days later, and we were coming back from another family occasion. And the other thing is with this is that you're not telling anybody. So there I was. So obviously my mum knew and my brothers, but not kind of my extended family. And at a time when actually I needed them most, I was still feeling that I had to hide this information. So I had got up from the family meal to go to the loo and I was bleeding again. And I just sat down back at the table but didn't say.
It's incredible, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and women have been putting that themselves through that for years and years and years, because of course we're not told to tell anyone before 3 months. And
yeah.
But it is holding that pain is so hard.
Yeah. And so I said to Harry, I need to go home, because we were, you know, a couple of hours away. And so we drove home. And through the night, through that evening, I got home. Harry made me tomato soup, because what else do you have but tomato soup and Marmite toast?
Mm.
Got on the sofa and my two cats came and sat with me, basically on me, which is quite unusual because they don't like each other. So the fact they were actually right with me. And I somehow felt quite peaceful. I felt quite connected. It was almost like this was the last thing I needed to do, because in my eyes, that will always be my first baby.
Mm.
And, you know, I still feel grief around that miscarriage, and I have never let myself enjoy another pregnancy.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to talk to you about that as well, because I think one of the things that fertility struggles, treatment does, you know, takes away from us, is that when you do finally get pregnant, and obviously you did get pregnant on your second round of IVF, because it is a miracle science and it does work, then, you know, what was your, how did it feel? Did you feel that you could enjoy the pregnancy?
I've never let myself go there again. The way I felt in my first pregnancy will always be so unique. With both Lola and Kit, I have never relaxed and never let myself really enjoy the pregnancy until the moment they were born.
Mm. And I think that's really, really common.
Yeah.
And what about how has this journey affected your motherhood?
I think going through fertility treatment has really affected me more than I allowed myself to believe, actually. And because you go through the struggle and you're on this roller coaster, and you get the result that you're hoping for. And then before you know it, the baby's here and you're a mother. But you have given, well, I certainly gave no thought to the impact that becoming a mother would have on me, because my sole focus was on getting pregnant and holding a pregnancy and having a healthy baby.
Uh-huh.
So now suddenly finding myself in the position of being a mum, if I have a difficult day, which you do as mums, you know, every day is, you know, it's hard work. You can't help but feel guilty for ever saying anything negative around motherhood, because you know how much you want it for it, and you know how many other people want it. And, you know, I would always find it very difficult going through the struggles if I ever heard somebody complaining about, you know, oh, teething, or... or, you know, oh, she doesn't sleep. And I remember thinking I'd do anything for a sleepless night.
Mm.
But then you're suddenly in it. And your life, I don't want to say post-traumatic, because that sounds possibly a bit extreme. But you haven't really given yourself time to get over what you've actually been through before you're suddenly then in this whole new role, learning this whole new chapter in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And then for me, I was writing Dare to Dream when I fell pregnant naturally with Kit, which was a total surprise. And then how was I going to say, oh, I was that girl that had IVF and then she fell pregnant naturally, mm-hmm. which, you know, you hear all these kind of cliche stories when you're going through it and you think, well, that's never going to be me. And then all of a sudden, I found myself in that position. And I remember when I found out I was pregnant with Kit, just thinking, how was that so simple? It was almost like, is that a joke? Because of everything I have been through.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, that is, that is true that people will look at you now and go, well, you went through this difficult time, but you've had the fairy tale ending. And what and they don't know what their ending is going to be. And what I think is so brilliant about what you're doing is you're saying that, you know, it doesn't end. You've taken it with you. It's still with you. But what else would you be saying to those people that perhaps don't know what their ending is going to be?
First of all, that you're not alone. There are a lot of people going through what you're going through, and however isolated you might feel, you are not alone. I think it's incredibly important to put yourself first and think about the things that make you happy and take the time for yourself to do what it is that you and your partner need to cope best with getting through everything and really looking after yourself. But also, don't panic, don't be frightened. You know, I think the thing with fertility and with IVF is that it is this amazing science, but at some point nature does take over. And even when you get given whatever diagnosis you're given, you still hear these miracle stories. So I think always believe and keep hope and don't be afraid to talk about it to others. Think about the people that you could trust and open up to. And try to start to think about how you might talk about it and share it.
I think that's beautiful advice. I just want to ask you one last question to finish. I'm sure that you get asked a lot about how this has impacted on your relationship. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you're particularly asked that because you're in a high-profile relationship. So I'm not going to ask you that question because I think, you know, fertility struggles sometimes pulls us together. It pushes us apart. It's definitely a hugely stressful thing on any relationship. So what I want to ask you, Izzy, is what does Harry think about you taking on this public role, trying to support other people, trying to change the world of fertility for the better as you are doing? What does he think?
When I started to talk about fertility and opening up, it was Harry that suggested that I wrote a book. And he is the one that understands most that for me, writing Dare to Dream, if it helped one person, that was enough for me. I think probably I've grown up with my mum being somebody that, you know, for example, when my brother was unwell, when he was in intensive care, and her own son was fighting for his life, she would still go off and get lunch for everybody else's family who were also suffering. And I think I've grown up watching mum want to help others. And I think when something like this happens to you, you want to help others. You want to feel like there's something you can do. What have you learned from this experience? And for me, I don't want to have gone through all this and then being in the situation I'm in where I am married to Harry, who, you know, is in the public eye, and not make the most of that opportunity to talk about it and to get the conversation out there about fertility so that we are better educated and better informed and we think before we say to somebody, so are you thinking about starting a family?
Well, thank you, Izzy. It's been such an honour to interview you on your first episode. And let me tell you this, you have helped many more than one person already. And I know you're going to help many, many more. So thank you.
Thank you, Jessica.
So I've decided at the end of each podcast to include a little mindfulness or self-care exercise. I think when you're going through any sort of fertility struggles or difficulties, listening to obviously quite an emotional podcast might leave you feeling a little bit more vulnerable. So I just thought this would be a nice way to kind of share some things that I found useful. So in this podcast, I spoke about how I said no to Facebook and the impact that sometimes going on social media can have. You know, perhaps seeing a pregnancy announcement or just something that's going to maybe wobble you if you're not feeling that strong that day. So a little tip is to put all your social media into one box on your phone and just put a word. So I use think. So before I click onto the Instagram or Facebook or whatever it might be, it just gives me a moment to stop and pause and think about whether I feel that I actually want to go in and look. So that's my little tip for this week.